This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
3 weeks from tonight, the NFL draft will begin. First round, followed by rounds 2 and 3 on Friday night, and then 4 through 7 on Saturday. Washington's got 5 choices. Their first round pick is number 29 overall. They've got a second round pick at number 61, and then they wait until day 3. Trevor Sikkema from PFF is one of the best at analyzing the draft. He is a lead NFL draft analyst for Pro Football Focus. You can follow Trevor at Tampa Bay Trey on X, on Twitter. He joins us right now. It's always good to have you, especially this time of year. I actually just want to start, before we get into anything Washington related or even player specific, overall, for those that are starting to get into this, big picture, describe what kind of draft this is, Trevor. Is it a good draft? Is it a, you know, kind of a mid, you know, level mixed, you know, kind of draft, or is it a bad one?
I would not say it's a bad one. No, I mean, it's not as star-studded as last year's was. It felt like, you know, for example, Brock Bowers going 13. I mean, that's just a product of how good that draft class was, and especially how good the quarterback position was last year. And so it's not going to be last year's in terms of, you know, just having these stars that you're going to get everywhere throughout the top 20. But in my opinion, I've said this before, I think the winners of this draft are going to be the teams that really own rounds 2 through 4, you know, whether it's having a lot of picks in that range, moving up and down, navigating that the right way, because I think that there are still good players in this class, and you could still get some good guys, you know, anywhere within the top 12. Really, outside of the top 15, the rankings are going to be very close between guys who are, you know, ranked 20th all the way to 60th. I just think that the margin is very small in between a lot of those players. And so if you're able to get the right ones and a lot of those players, to me, you're going to be able to build out the core of your roster with a lot of these guys who, okay, they might not be stars for you, but they're great rotational players. They're great depth players. They really raise the floor of what you're trying to do within your scheme. So to me, I think it's a good draft class for that. And some people might hear that and go, oh, okay, well, you know, it's not really going to be high impact. I wouldn't say that either. You've just got to be able to make the right decisions, and it's not as obvious at the very top.
Where is it strong position group-wise?
I would say that the defensive line, there's a lot of depth along the defensive line. Edge rushers, interior defensive linemen, I think it's pretty strong within that group. I think it's an excellent year to need a tight end, to need a running back. I think wide receiver is okay. I mean, I think it's good. It's not, again, as star-studded as wide receivers have been in the past. But, you know, a good friend of mine, Benjamin Solak, who works over at ESPN, I mean, he says this all the time, you know, like, gone are the days of bad wide receiver classes almost, right? I mean, just every single year because of the rise of, you know, seven on seven camps when you're in high school. I mean, you've got these kids who are truly getting important skills and experience at these skill positions, specifically at wide receiver, more than ever. And so a lot of these wide receivers, when they get to college, and we saw that this year with so many incredible true freshman wide receivers, they already know how to play the position. It's not like they're learning it for the first time and they're going to have to redshirt. The best ones have often had a lot of practice. And so then obviously if you get 3-4 years down the road, just more experience, we're just never – I don't know if we're ever going to have a quote-unquote bad wide receiver class again. So it's not as great as it was last year at the very top, but it's still a good one. But I would say that – I would say that defensive tackle, edge rusher, tight end, running back, in my opinion, those are the deepest groups in this class.
Before I ask you where the draft is weak, after quarterback, what do you think the most important position is in football? There was a time where you would say left tackle or pass rusher. Is it still one of those two?
I still think it is. Just because it's unquestioned that quarterback is the most important position. And then I think right after that, you have to talk about, okay, well, who affects the passer, who gets after the passer, and then who protects the passer. Like those have to be, in my opinion, the two most important positions in the game. Now, I would tell you that the rise of wide receivers who know how to win up one-on-one, and then certainly cornerbacks who know how to shut down wide receivers one-on-one, are incredibly valuable for your football team as well. But it's hard for me to not say, okay, tier one is of importance is quarterback. Tier two are individual difference makers at either the pass protector spot, so guys at offensive tackle who can win one-on-one, or individual pass rushers who can win one-on-one on the outside. That goes into tier two. And then I would honestly say, you know, safety, corner, wide receiver, and even the great interior offensive linemen are now starting to rise in their value as well. So I would say that that would be tier three.
I'm going to ask you where the draft is weak here in a moment, and we'll get into Washington. But is there even such a thing anymore as a true shutdown corner?
I think there is. It's not – you don't often see – like I feel as though defensive schemes – are much more likely to base what they do around maybe a safety who is elite at single high coverages than, say, a corner who you just go, okay, well, this guy's just going to play man coverage every single down, and we don't have to worry about him, and you're playing true shadow coverage, because it just requires so much else, right? I mean, when you think of calling man coverages, especially in today's day and age where it feels like nickel is the new base, as they say. You have five defensive backs and three corners on the field instead of just four. Well, if you're playing man coverage across the board because you have a CB1 that you feel great about doing that, well, you can only call those plays if you feel good about CB2 and CB3 also being able to play man coverage. And so even if you get guys who have true shutdown man coverage abilities, this day and age, you're just not – you don't have the luxury to call it as much as you would want to for it to be effective. So I do still think that those corners still exist. I do still think they're valuable. But as the game has evolved, as we have put more defensive backs on the field, in order for you to feel good about calling man coverage for your CB1 who might be able to do it, you have to feel good about CB2 and CB3 doing it. It's almost like you're only as good as your weakest link. You know, coverage starts to be the same conversation – that we talk about with the offensive line. And so that's why I think even when you talk about defenses where you go, okay, well, they're a man coverage heavy team, it's probably only about 50% at most that you would play man coverage.
All right, we are talking to Trevor Sikkema, a lead draft analyst for Pro Football Focus. Where is this draft weak?
I'd say certainly at the quarterback position, right? I like Cam Ward a lot. I think he is going to be the number one overall pick, and I can understand why that would be the case. Certainly what he brings as a ceiling, in my opinion, is the one quarterback in this class who I think has all pro ability. But then after that, I think that Shedeur Sanders could have a high floor in this league. I don't know if he has the arm talent and the athleticism to ever really be a tier two quarterback, let alone a tier one. I think he could be a good mid-tier starter. But for that to be QB2 in a class, I mean, that's disappointing. Certainly, Jackson Dart and Jalen Milrow, those guys are sort of wild cards that you could take a chance on. Maybe they pan out, but there's consistency issues with both of them that I think make them risk. So I think that it is weak at the quarterback position. I think it's weak overall at the offensive tackle position, and I'm not saying that because there aren't guys that I don't think could pan out at tackle at the NFL level. But there's a lot of tackles in this class. Will Campbell, Kelvin Banks Jr., Donovan Jackson, you know, like Jonas Avanaia from Arizona. Like, just a lot of guys who you go, yeah, they could be tackle, but are they really just going to be better at guard? Now, I think that guys like Campbell and Banks should absolutely get the chance to play offensive tackle. But I think overall offensive tackle is decently weak. I think interior offensive line, depending on how many tackles you're moving inside, also is a little bit weak, specifically the center position. There's just not a lot of guys that you feel great about beyond Gray Zabel and Jared Wilson from Georgia as guys that you think could be great starters at the NFL level, and you're not having to worry too much about it. Linebacker, I think, is a little bit weak. And you know, corner, I think at the very top, there's some guys who could certainly be starters at the NFL level, but I do think it's a decent drop-off at the cornerback position after those first five or six guys.
Who are the best three players in this draft in order?
Oh, I think that, you know, it's without question Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter at 1 and 2. Now, I would tell you that Travis Hunter's number one. I think that this is just such a unique football player. And for as great of an athlete as he is to be able to play both sides of the ball, in my opinion, he does not get enough credit for how high of a football IQ he has. You don't get that many snaps unless you truly understand everything that goes into the game, the technique, where you win, the why, the geometry, the math, the instincts, the ball skills, everything that goes into playing this game at a very high level. Travis Hunter does, on top of being an elite athlete. So he is, and I've been wire to wire with this, my number one overall player in this class. I think Abdul Carter is right behind him. It's so hard not to see the Micah Parsons in his game. I know, same helmet, same school, same number, same position. I get it. I'm not just trying to make an easy comparison here. He absolutely wins in those ways. And for the third prospect, I think there's a lot of really great arguments for a Mason Graham, an Ashton Jeanty, a Tetrone McMillan, a Tyler Warren, someone in that group. Ultimately, I have Tetrone McMillan, the wide receiver from Arizona, as my number three overall prospect in this class, and then those guys that I just mentioned following right behind him. So in my order, I think it's Travis Hunter at one and Abdul Carter in a tier of their own, and then at the front of that next tier, I'll give it to Tetrone McMillan to stay true to my big board.
Is Hunter, in terms of sort of evaluating and grading as a prospect, he's the highest rated prospect since who?
I actually haven't, you know, gone back to look at who that would be. It's hard to go position by position, but I remember, you know, like Trevor Lawrence, for example, got an unbelievably high score for me. You know, like even, you know, this one didn't exactly pan out, but like Kyle Pitts had an incredibly high score for me because Kyle Pitts coming out of Florida, it's almost like what more could you want from a receiving tight end? So it's hard not to give him an insanely high grade as a prospect going into the pros, but like, you know, Trevor Lawrence is, the one that comes to mind just because he has had the highest quarterback grade of a guy that that I have ever graded. Now, I haven't been going back, you know, all the way to like Andrew Luck and things like that, but I would say that he's probably that highest graded prospect I have since then.
Yeah, that was going to be my guess. I was wondering if you were going to go back to Myles Garrett or Andrew Luck, for that matter. We're talking to Trevor Sikkema, PFF. All right, let's talk about Washington at 29. You know, they had a season, as you're very familiar with, in which they discovered that they have a truly elite quarterback on a rookie contract. They won 12 regular season games, 2 road playoff games, and they were 60 minutes away in the NFC title game away from the Super Bowl. They have spent a lot of draft choices in sort of that mode of trying to take advantage of, you know, the rookie deal, trading for Marshawn Lattimore, trading for Deebo Samuel, trading for Laremy Tunsil. So as you think about Washington, the mode they're in, which is they feel like they got a window here, maybe only the first window with Jaden Daniels. There will be more windows to come, hopefully. But what do you think they're looking at in terms of what to do at 29 if they stay there, the players that would be interesting to them?
I think you first have to look at the defensive line, right? I mean, I know they drafted Johnny Newton last year, who I'm a big fan of. They don't have John Allen anymore, but you got Daron Payne next to him. You got Johnny Newton, and you feel good enough about that at least. You signed Javon Kinlaw. I think that was a pretty big overpay of a deal, but certainly, you know, the Adam Peters connection, drafting him when he was in San Francisco, perhaps they see how to get the most out of him there because, you know, he is somebody who has some unique athletic ability for his size. And so, you feel, I think, okay about that interior there. But the edge rush group, I mean, Cleveland Farrell, Dorrance Armstrong, I like the addition of Dietrich Wise. I really do. And, you know, on top of that as well, I like Jonathan Jones coming over as well. So I like those two additions that they had from the Patriots that they brought over from free agency. But they're missing juice, right? They're missing juice from the pass rush level. And so I'm looking at guys like, you know, does a Mike Green, the edge rusher from Marshall, yeah, does he fall a little bit? Does James Pierce Jr. fall a little bit? Is that the kind of bet that you're trying to take there? I think that, you know, for as much as I think Mykel Williams, that's probably the right range for him, end of the first round, I don't know how much he really brings to the table above guys like Farrell and Armstrong when it comes to pass rushing ability. So that's really what I would be hoping for if I was them. You know, somebody like that, maybe, you know, in the second round, maybe you're looking at a guy like a Princely Umanyelen, maybe a Braden Swinson from LSU, something along the edge rusher to get a guy in there who knows how to win with some speed, some explosiveness, and some finesse. Those four players that I mentioned, Green, Pierce Jr., Swinson, and Umanyelen, all have pass rush win percentages around 20% or above 20%. To me, that's what Washington should be prioritizing there at number 29.
The one thing about Green, who, by the way, is so impressive on tape for sure, and I started looking at sort of the edge guys about a week ago, and you've been studying them much longer. I just don't think that this group, Adam Peters, Dan Quinn, the front office, I don't think they're going to take any risks on any red flag character guys. That would be my one thing. I had somebody on here telling me that Green and Pierce Jr., there is some baggage.
Yeah, so I have heard that as well. And again, when you watch the tape, you would say that these guys should probably be top 20 picks. Well, if they're going to be available for Washington at 29, there's probably a reason why. And you don't want to overlook those things. You know, I had heard from a source that Mike Green is going to be off of one team's board completely. But the thing is, I thought that we would start to hear a lot more of this after the combine when, you know, he was asked about what happened at Virginia in high school and things like that. And I was surprised at how little came out after that. And I was surprised that we didn't hear like, oh yeah, yeah, he's going to be off teams' boards and things like that. So I think the draft range for Mike Green is a complete unknown. I have no idea where he is going to get drafted. The tape would tell you he should get drafted in the first round, but the character concerns in the past, yeah, I could push him to day two. I might even push him to day three, just depending on what teams really believe about what happened in that situation.
You know, the Tunsil trade, basically, you know, you cross off tackle at 29. They've added a lot of players defensively, but not necessarily a star player or a potential star player down the road. The number one thing they struggled with, Trevor, last year more than anything else is they got run on. You know, they faced top-tier backs throughout this season, and I went through all of the backs they faced. I mean, it was one after another in terms of the elite running backs in the league, including, obviously, Saquon Barkley three times. But they have to be better defensively against the run. And before having you on, I pulled up your last mock, which came post-combine. So, you know, this is a little bit, you know, a few weeks ago, and Washington's already traded John Allen. You referenced Darius Alexander from Toledo as a D-tackle possibility, and you've already talked about just D-line in general being loaded in this draft, but you said that this guy graded like an elite run defender. Of the edge guys that you talked about, who's a really good run defender, edge setter, as much as being a threat to rush the passer?
Well, I think that that's where a Mykel Williams would come in from Georgia, right? If that's sort of what they want to do, Williams was an excellent run defender for them over the last couple of seasons. And I think the disappointment with him is he ever going to be the pass rusher that you want him or need him to be if you're taking him? Like, for example, a lot of people had Mykel Williams in their top 10 overall players going into the season. And the right idea was, you see the size, you see the strength, you see the floor that he brings you as a great run defender. But you were just hoping that pass rush ability was able to progress. It really didn't. So it's hard to see, you know, like, for example, a team like the Carolina Panthers at 8, the New Orleans Saints at number 9, even the Chicago Bears at number 10, who all could potentially take an edge rusher there. It's hard to see them taking a Mykel Williams if you just don't think that he's going to develop into a pass rusher. Now, if you get all the way to 29, it's a totally different story. Picking him at 29, I mean, it's almost just like you're betting with house money. Now you're getting a guy with a very, very high floor that you feel great about playing in a lot of different situations, whether you want to run an odd front or an even front. And you basically are saying, hey, we're getting this guy at 29. If he turns out to be a great pass rusher, great. But if he doesn't, we're going to have a starter along the defensive line that we feel great about for at least the next 4 years and hopefully a second contract into it. So to me, if that's the avenue that they're going to go, that to me is the one that makes the most sense, because after that, you know, you've got a little bit of a waste. I mean, you're talking about a Landon Jackson, potentially the long, strong edge rusher from Arkansas. If you like that size, and you know, maybe a JT Tuimoloau a little bit later in the second round, he's somebody that can give you a lot of power and reliability on the edge. But those are a couple of the names. I would definitely say that Mykel Williams is one of them. And then Landon Jackson and JT Tuimoloau is the three I would target.
All right, we're talking to Trevor Sikkema from Pro Football Focus. I want to talk about running back here for a moment, because obviously I think the perception of the position has changed with respect to the draft, right? I mean, how many running backs, what's the most in terms of the number of running backs that could go in the first round this year?
I think the most that we could get is three. I think we're going to get two. I think after the combine, there was a lot of high praise for this group. Like, okay, does Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State, does he sneak in? Does Travion Henderson, his teammate from Ohio State, do those guys sneak in? If Caleb Johnson from Iowa maybe had a little bit better of a combine performance, you know, would he potentially sneak in? Ultimately, I think that Gentee and Omarion Hampton are the only two running backs that we get into the first round. I think the over-unders that I've seen is set at 2.5, and I think that's actually the perfect line. And right now I would just go a little bit under, because I think the teams would be in a situation where I think that they would tell themselves, hey, we can wait and get one of these other really good, because running back is deep this year. It's really deep. It's not just those players that I named there. It's Cam Scadaboo as well, and Dylan Sampson, and RJ Harvey, and DJ Giddens, Damian Martinez. Like, there's a lot of running backs in this class that you could feel good about. And so ultimately, I do think that maybe hurts the class's chances of seeing more than two running backs in the first round.
If Hampton were available at 29, what are the chances, just, you know, give me your hunch, that he would be the top-rated player on Washington's board?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. That's a great way to pose it, because I have him at 24th overall on my big board. So, you know, if he ends up being their top player there, I think that he could, that could very well be the case. You know, I think it just kind of comes down to, are there positions that you're really going to take out of it? Like, is it really, hey, we're going to target defensive line, we need to get better against the run, we're going to look at edge rushers, we're going to look at interior defensive linemen, and then maybe if Omarion Hampton's there and we love him, we'll also throw him into that conversation. I think the intriguing part of that would be, does a Mykel Williams get to you at number 29? Because I think he could very well be a little bit higher on their big board. And then you also have guys like, okay, interior defensive lineman. Walter Nolan, does he make it there? Probably not. You know, Kenneth Grant, does he make it there? Probably not. But then you have a guy like,
by the
like
way, no chance Shamar Stewart makes it to 29, right?
I don't think so. For as much as I'm an analyst that pushes back on him going in the top 10, guys who are built like him and are that explosive basically have exclusively gone number one overall. Jadeveon Clowney, Myles Garrett, Mario Williams. Like, anybody who has a physical and athletic comp to what Shamar Stewart did at the combine this year, they basically all have gone number one overall. But Shamar does not have near the production of any of those guys, even Jadeveon Clowney. So it makes me think that, okay, he's not going number one overall. He's going a little bit further. But I can't see this league passing up on this guy in the top 15, even if I myself would be wary of it. So I don't think he's getting there. In my opinion, to answer your question, I think it would come down to Darius Alexander from Toledo, the defensive tackle, Derek Harmon, the defensive tackle from Oregon, Tyleek Williams, the defensive tackle from Ohio State, or, depending on where they have Omarion Hampton, he could be in that group as well.
Yeah, because I do think that adding another playmaker, and maybe in order of preference, running back followed by wide receiver, given that they added Deebo Samuel. And by the way, Deebo, I think, is going to line up at running back next year in Cliff Kingsbury's offense. But I was just curious if Hampton, A, could make it to 29, and then what the likelihood would be that he could be the highest player rated on their board. Because I think they proved last year with Johnny Newton in the second round that they'll take best player available. You know, they were, you know, they still had Payne and Allen last year. They probably thought they were going to move on from Allen, which, you know, played into Newton. But I think best player available. Real quickly, sticking on the running backs, because you mentioned him, and he happens to be my favorite, you know, after, you know, DeGenti, Hampton, and I guess I'd throw in Travion Henderson. But what's the chance that Damian Martinez makes it to day three?
I think there's always a chance with the running back position, just because it's not always prioritized maybe where it should be, because in a supply and demand world, there is just so much more supply than there is immediate demand. And so because of that, I think you see some backs who are really talented play. Like, for example, look at last year, right? Bucky Irving for the Buccaneers, fourth round. Tyrone Tracy for the New York Giants, fourth round. Like, these are good football players who were higher on my board than where they ended up getting picked. I think I had Tyrone Tracy somewhere in the 80s or 90s on my board.
I think his season got very overlooked because the Giants were so bad. He was excellent.
Oh, he was excellent. I think I had Bucky Irving around like 73, 74 on my board. So obviously these guys are getting picked later than where I have them ranked as prospects, but it's just because of the nature of the position. So on the surface level, the reason why I'm giving you this context is because on the surface level, I would tell you that no, I don't think that Damian Martinez maybe should get to them in the beginning of day three. But I think that there is a world where he could just get pushed down into that range, because there are a lot of other running backs that have had a little bit more production than him, or maybe they just have more draft hype than he does and maybe end up getting a steal and a gem there in the fourth round. You know, I think about that as a draft strategy overall for Washington. It almost feels like either they love Hampton and they would take Hampton at 29, or you're waiting until the fourth round to take a running back. That's basically the only two options,
that makes
in my
sense.
Opinion, that they would have.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. What about wide receiver? Because I think they could still be looking for, you know, another playmaker. I would say running back first, wide receiver second. But who, like, you know, Golden obviously had a great combine. I'm a big Luther Burden fan. He seems to be dropping. But who's the receiver that makes it, you know, unexpectedly to 29 that also may end up being the top-rated player on their board when they pick?
Yeah, I think Luther Burden is probably the answer there. I don't really understand why. I think he's one of the best players in this class. I think I'm going to have him in my top 15 when it's all said and done. You know, I'm looking at a lot of these other big boards from draft analysts that I really love and respect.
Why is he dropping? The tape certainly doesn't drop him.
So the only explanation that I can really get is, one, it was a dip in production this year, so I think people are maybe just looking at that. And the more constant one that I hear is some people doubt what kind of a route runner he is and how good of a route runner he could be overall, because they watch the 2024 tape, and I'll be honest, it's a lot of manufactured easy stuff. You know, it's a lot of like getting him in motion before the snap and then swinging it to him. It's honestly used a lot like Deebo Samuel was when he was in San Francisco. But I don't understand how you watch what Luther Burden does with the ball after the catch.
Yeah.
The sharp change of direction ability to make guys miss. How do you watch that happen and say to yourself, with a good wide receiver coach at the NFL level, he can't be excellent as a separation player? That's how I feel about him. So it feels as though the answer to your question is actually Luther Burden, which I don't think should be the case, because I think he's one of the better players in the class.
Yeah, I've said this before about him, that I don't know if he lines up more on the outside or the inside, but it doesn't really matter, because not that anybody is Tariq Hill with the ball in his hands over the last 10 years. I mean, I don't think there's a comp in terms of the true threat to a defense once he has the ball in his hands. But this dude, what you just described, the change of pace, the stopping on a dime and making people miss, I thought looked high-level elite. I wanted to ask you about one more player, and I really appreciate the time. I love having you on the show. So I saw this, you know, the South Carolina safety, Iman Awori, get mocked to Washington in a in some mock. I can't even remember what it was. And the dude ran 4.38 at the combine, and he's 6'3", 225. Is anybody comping him to Sean Taylor in terms of an NFL style and body type and explosiveness?
I'm certainly not, because I am someone who is lower on Iman Awori than I think a lot of other draft analysts out there. I think he's one hell of an athlete, but I worry about where his home position is at the NFL level. I wonder if it's going to be as a linebacker, because I don't always love his flip to hips, turn and chase, even though he is a great straight line athlete and an explosive athlete. I don't always love the fluidity there. Sometimes I think it shows up when he's in space. Sometimes I think it shows up when he's asked to cover wide receivers in the slot. I think there was some production this year when it came to ball production and interceptions that were absolute gifts just straight to him. I kind of think that he plays his best in space, but I think that he also can get lost in space. I don't know if he has the physical mentality to just play in the box all the time, even though I think his skill set might actually be best as a linebacker. So I am skeptical about this player. He is going to get drafted probably in the first round, but he is a guy who I think I'm just looking at in this class and I'm saying, I will let someone else draft him. I will be comfortable with that. Now, all that to say, for Washington, it's very interesting, because they drafted Dominique Campton last year. They brought in Tyler Owens last year. And those are two players who, athleticism-wise and body type-wise, that's exactly what Nick Iman Awori is. So we have already seen this team prioritize that exact type of a hybrid player, albeit with late selections and undrafted selections. Do they believe that they can actually have the best version of what they were going for there this year in a Nick Iman Awori? So I could understand the fit and them being interested in him. I am just a draft analyst in this class where I would say, hey, I would let somebody else draft Nick Iman Awori. I wouldn't be drafting him myself.
You know what's great about this conversation with you, which I've probably had, I don't know, the last 3 or 4 years, is that we didn't even talk about quarterback, because we don't have to do that in Washington anymore. You're excellent to have on the show. I really appreciate it. I know you're going to be busy. Enjoy the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys. Anytime.
Trevor Sikkema, everybody, from Pro Football Focus. We'll follow up on that conversation next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. I want to tell you about Window Nation's latest deal. It's a good one. It's actually the first time I can think of that they've ever offered this. So if you need new windows, listen carefully. They're giving you 4 free windows with every 4 purchased. So if you need 8 windows, you're only going to pay for 4 of them. If you need 16 windows, you're only going to pay for 8 of them. Add to that, you don't have to put any money down, you don't have to make any payments, and they're not going to charge you interest for 2 full years. So you don't have to pay for those windows until the year 2027. Add to that, if you buy a house full of windows, they'll give you a free entry door. This is right now an unprecedented and really without comparison offer that Window Nation is giving anybody that thinks they need new windows. If you've got windows that are 10 years of age or older, you're probably not getting the most efficient use of your windows, which means you're paying dearly for it on your heating bills and air conditioning bills. If you're looking to just upgrade the look and feel of your home, because after 5 or 6 or 7 years, your windows are outdated, they're probably not the best technologied windows either. If you think you need new windows, the only thing that I'd ask is give Window Nation a shot. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. Mention my name, and they'll just come out and give you an estimate. And then you can choose what you want to do. The estimate's free. They don't pressure you after they leave you with the estimate. You can shop the offer if you want. I don't think you'll find a better company, customer service-wise, to work with. They've got over 20,000 five-star reviews on Google. I don't think you're going to work with a company that offers a better product. By the way, they guarantee that product with a lifetime warranty. And right now, four free windows with every four you buy, no down payment, no payments, and no interest for two full years, and a free entry door if you buy a house full of windows. I don't think you're going to find a better offer. Call them at 866-90-NATION if this appeals to you, or go to windownation.com and mention my name. They will take good care of you. Really like Trevor Sikkema as a guest. I think we've had him on, I don't know, 3 or 4 years running. He's excellent. He's always prepared for the market that he goes on in, which not everybody is. That's good. I think that the playmaking position could come in the first round. I mean, I'm not discounting anything as a possibility. You know, I would certainly think that if they stay at 29, they would love the best player available to be an edge pass rusher, somebody they believe could be a star pass rusher, but at the same time can stop the run. And this draft is loaded with those guys. And he mentioned, you know, several of them. Abdul Carter, by the way, right now might end up being the second player picked after Cam Ward by the Cleveland Browns. You know, Travis Hunter's status is the top player on the board for Trevor. I've seen other people have Abdul Carter as the top player on the board. But Travis Hunter's, you know, looks like a star player. But a Mike Green has some baggage. A Pierce Jr. has some baggage. A Michael Williams from Georgia could be there. Nick Scarrington was one of the guys that Ben talked about in his first mock draft. The kid from BC, I've seen mock to Washington a number of times. You know, they could also look at a very deep draft as the way we've talked about running back, as, hey, we can get that player or a comparable player at 61, that there's no real difference between the player you're going to get at 29, say a Nick Scarrington, or a player that you could get at 61 in the second round. You know, one of the two guys from Ohio State, as an example. I think that that is a position that they're going to have some choices at 29 and 61. And I think running back and wide receiver are going to be possibilities as well. The question that I asked Trevor Sikkema, to me, is the most important, you know, answer that we'll never get from them prior to the draft. But if the highest rated player on their board is a running back, would they take him at 29? I think wide receiver is different because, of course, I think if the highest rated player on their board was a wide receiver, whether it's a Matthew Golden or a Luther Burden or an Igbuka, they would take the wide receiver. They didn't solve the forever number two wide receiver challenge that they have if it's not going to be Luke McCaffrey with the trading for Deebo Samuel. You know, they'd love to add another playmaker offensively. And if the best player on the board is a wide receiver, fine. But I think the running back thing is different because, you know, it's been proven over time that you can get star running backs after night two on day three. And there are so many of them in this draft. But if an Omarion Hampton is the best player on their board, and they see a big difference between Hampton and a Judkins or a Trayvon Henderson or a Caleb Johnson or a Damian Martinez on night two or day three, and they actually believe Hampton could become the next Saquon Barkley. Let's just throw, you know, the best back in the league, certainly arguably the best back in the league's name out there. Don't you have to take him? Like, if he is there at 29 and he's the best player on the board and they see a significant difference between Hampton and the player they could get in the fourth round or the fifth round or, you know, on day three, don't you have to take him? I think you do. I think we've seen the impact of great running backs, especially when you have a great quarterback. Especially when that great quarterback is dual threat. So trust me, I'd have no issue at all if they took a running back at 29. And I would assume that the running back is the highest rated player on their board. And I would assume that they believe that there is a big difference between that running back and the running backs that could be available to them on night two or day three. The question is, do you think, and I'll ask you, Denton, and then I'll answer it, is there a big difference between Jeanty and Hampton and then all of the other running backs that draft experts are very excited about? Is there a big difference? Are those two guys, Barkley, Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, capable?
I mean, Jeanty is more of like your power runner kind of a deal. You know, I don't know that he's going to be, when you mention those other guys, all of them.
Okay, he could be a Jonathan Taylor.
He could be a Jonathan Taylor type. I would agree with that. I think Hampton has better size for the NFL. Like, it's crazy when you watch Jeanty, it doesn't always feel like he's short, but then you see him measure. He's 5'9".
He's a shorter guy. He's tough.
He's a tough dude, but he's a shorter guy. So it is going to be interesting to see what he does when he's matching up against all big dudes, right? Like, he had really good games against teams with bigger guys, the Oregon game, even Penn State, although they were kind of they were hunting for 100 yards for him at the end of that one in the college football playoff game. But you started to see as the season progressed what it looks like when he goes up against bigger guys, so I'd be interested to see how he fares in the NFL. I think Hampton is a much better fit, at least here, based on some of the dynamic elements that he would add, and he has – with all due respect to Brian Robinson, he has much better vision than Brian Robinson does. So regardless of how you feel about the offensive line...
Well, he's a much better athlete.
Like, whatever went wrong with B-Rob, whether that was more him or the offensive line scheme, what have you, I do think a lot of those issues are fixed if Hampton is running back one next year.
Yeah, and look, all of these backs are used to being in the backfield with their quarterback in the shotgun or in the pistol. I think there probably is a difference between Jeanty and Hampton and everybody else, and I think that's, and I would certainly trust at this point Adam Peters and company if they took, like, if you're going to take a Hampton at 29, and by the way, this is presumptuous because most people have now Hampton being taken before 29. And they actually have, you know, there is the chance where we could get a third running back taken in the first round. You know, a Travion Henderson or a Quinshon Judkins. You know, these guys are in play. It'd be weird to see that because we just haven't seen that so much in the draft in a while where you're talking about three backs maybe going in the first round. But if they were to take Hampton, I would assume that A, best player on the board, and B, they thought there was a major difference between Hampton and what they could get either in the second round at 61 or on night three. And like we've said in the conversation about Brian Robinson Jr., I would say if they draft a running back anywhere in their first three picks, that could mean the end of Brian Robinson Jr. That would be a big tell on that conversation.
It feels like that's almost the expectation, too.
I feel like it is. I do feel like it. I feel like they're going to take a running back. And I feel like they're going to take a running back that they absolutely believe could step in week one as their primary runner, with, you know, Eckler being the, you know, change of pace, third down, and then Debo being used in the backfield as well. There is no doubt that a running back, you know, we know this from our NFL, you know, being fans for as long as we've been fans, that's the position more than any other that somebody can step in week one and make a major impact and be ready to go. It takes the least amount of experience. All right. Got a couple of other things to wrap up the show with when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. This from Greg. Greg writes, adolescence, Kevin, is absolutely incredible. Each episode is single shot. Some of the greatest acting I've ever watched, as good as it gets. Incel, toxic masculinity, social media bullying, and watching a family get torn apart It was riveting, and it held a mirror up to all of us. I don't know if it held a mirror up to all of us, but I understand what you're saying to society to a certain degree, or certainly a segment of society to a certain degree. Yeah, a lot of you have tweeted me based on the discussion. I stayed up last night. I just started on Adolescence on Netflix. It's already, I think, the third most watched Netflix show of all time. It's 4 one-hour episodes. And it was really, really good. From Soma, regarding one-shot shows and film, the film 1917 was filmed in one shot. If you haven't seen it yet, it was amazing. Also, add Severance onto your watch list. I did see 1917. I loved it. And yes, that's true. That was filmed in one shot as well. And I think maybe that was like the first movie I saw that way. I've not watched Severance. Just a lot of people have seen the show already. Didn't hear about it, honestly, until 2 days ago. And last night, you know, after Ovi's goal and that game ended, pretty much just started at Denton. You can do it. I know you got a wedding in a week.
The thing is, the wedding in a week. That's what's holding me up from a lot of the television shows.
So right. Maybe well, after this would be, you know, maybe it's not a stress reliever from that. It's certainly not that, because this is
man. I need stress relief, not drama, right. not drama, not more drama.
All right, we got to go. Chris is next.